Okay, thanks. First of all, let me thank my, of course, the organizers for the wonderful meeting and program, and my collaborators that are also the co-authors of the paper that I'm basically going to discuss. Today, I will discuss how we expect massive black hole spins evolve during their cosmic histories. Just to give a brief introduction, the question, of course, is why? Why should we care about massive black hole spins? For a relativist, the point is, of course, mass and spins are the only two properties of an astrophysical black hole that are of interest because they fully describe the black hole. Since most of us, and as well as me, are astronomers or astrophysicists, there is another list of reasons why we are interested in massive black hole spins. Some of them we already know about because they, of course, influence the relative efficiency, hence the growth of massive black holes, as we heard on Monday, because the spins may or may be not linked to the production of jets, meaning the power of jet and the orientation of jet. Of course, Elena knows way better than me at this point, so feel free to discuss. Because they could influence the occupation fraction through kicks at the collisions that we just heard, and because apparently we start measuring them. For example, for massive black holes through iron line fitting. So the point is, of course, well, I hope I convinced you that studying massive black hole spins is interesting. And the point is theory up to the piece with observations and with reasons? So let's see. Of course, massive black hole spins can evolve through two main processes. Massive black hole coalescences, okay, at the merger of the two massive black holes, that is relevant in particular just after a coalescence, as you can imagine. But gas accretion has been proved to be a, or maybe the most important way to evolve the mass of the massive black holes and the spin as well through the Soltan argument. So in this talk, I will focus on gas accretion onto supermassive black hole, and I will neglect massive black hole mergers. So if you look at the literature, you see that accretion onto black holes basically happens in two flavors. Okay? Sometimes we consider it coherent. That means that the accretion always happen on the same plane, with the angular momentum of the accreting gas that is fixed in time. Okay? The other possible scenario is chaotic. That means basically that small patches of gas falls onto the black holes with directions that are totally randomly oriented, and the distribution is isotropic. Okay, so of course the predictions of these two different behaviors of the accretion is quite different. Okay, if you think about coherent accretion, since you keep on adding angular momentum in the same direction, the obvious result is that your black hole will be maximally spinning, or as highly spinning as possible after the accretion of a small amount of mass of the order of the initial mass of the black hole, whatever its initial spin was. If instead you think about chaotic accretion, since the angular momentum per unit of mass of a retrograde disk is higher because the last stable orbit is farther out with respect to a prograde one, if you create enough mass, on average, you decrease the massive black hole spin. So you expect small spins, let's say, of the order of zero or so. Now, my point here is that these scenarios are quite simple, and there are some ingredients that, in my opinion, should be improved in order to have an idea of how massive black hole spins evolve during accretion. So first of all, spins are vectors. They can change not only their magnitude, but also the direction. And this actually matters also for the evolution of the spin magnitude. And the other point is probably, it is in my opinion, more interesting, is that there is no reason whatsoever to assume that the accretion is either exactly coherent for all the time, as well as there is no reason to assume that there is perfect isotropy in the massive black hole fueling. And so I decided to study a bit these two points and see what happens to the evolution of the massive black hole spins. So first, I want to introduce the process that evolves the massive black hole spin direction. This is the so-called Bardeen-Peterson effect. I will give a very naive explanation. Let's assume there is a massive black hole at the center. I guess I have a pointer here. Okay, this is the spin of the massive black hole. This is an accretion disk, and the angular momentum of the accretion disk is misaligned with respect to the spin. Okay, since at the very center the angular momentum is going to be dominated by the massive black hole spin, the gas will start precess through Lenz-Thirring precession, okay, around the massive black hole spin, so that there will be gas here around, and the configuration that we all expect is something like an inner region in which the disk is orbiting on a plane that is perpendicular to the mass black hole spin, an outer region that is unperturbed, that is where you have the Newtonian limit, of course, or if you want, the Lenstein precession timescale is very long, and an intermediate region where the disk is warped. Okay, since the disk angular momentum evolves from this direction to this direction, because of the metric of the black hole, in order to conserve the total angular momentum of the system, the black hole as well has to align a little bit. And if you keep on accreting gas into this plane, you keep on aligning the black hole. Now, this is a very simplistic assumptions, and I think most of them are valid, but please, I will refer to Julian's talk later this week for more detailed physics. Now, let's study what happens if you change or if you relax the assumption of perfectly isotropic fueling onto the black holes, okay? So here I just set a reference frame, like a plane of the sky. Those points are the orientation of the angular momentum of each single accretion event onto the black hole. So I'm assuming small accretion events. Like in this case, you see they are isotropically distributed. Okay, this would be the chaotic accretion, if you want. So F is the fraction of the events in the southern hemisphere, whatever southern hemisphere means in this scenario. And it's basically half of the events, right? And then I modify this fraction. Now, for example, in this case, theta equal to zero would be the direction of the total angular momentum of the, you know, accretion reservoir. Okay? And in this case, basically everything happens in the northern hemisphere. So it's sort of aligned. I just want to comment that this scenario has nothing to do with the coherent accretion. A coherent accretion would be all the points in a single direction. Okay? This covers half of the sky. Now let's see what happens. If you look at the orientation of the spin during the massive black hole growth from 10 to the 4 to 10 to the 9 solar masses or more, in the isotropic case, that is usually called the chaotic scenario, the orientation of the spin between 0 and pi, this is theta, changes continuously with no preferential direction whatsoever. And this is expected because your system has no symmetry at all, so there is no preferential direction. It has to keep on evolving and covers all the space isotropically. More interestingly, from my point of view, okay, if you have this scenario in which all the accretion events are, you know, forced to be in one of the hemispheres, you see that the first evolution is quite similar, with the direction changing continuously from 0 to 90 degrees, of course, because there is nothing here. But at a given mass, you see that there is a clear trend of alignment between the direction of the spin of the massive black hole and the total angular momentum of the fueling material. Okay, and this evolution seems quite simple to me, so we looked for a simple explanation, possibly describable as a function of a single parameters, and this parameter was the ratio between the angular momentum of the disk and the angular momentum of the black hole. So basically we assumed that at every event you can accrete up to 10 to the 5 solar masses unless the black hole is small, and then we limited the amount of mass that you can accrete to the self-gravitation, to the mass of the self-gravitating disk, that is roughly 0.1 of the initial black hole mass, of the black hole mass. Okay, and the important point is that basically the angular momentum of the disk at the beginning is larger than the angular momentum of the black hole itself. But when you cross this 10 to the 7-ish, 10 to the 8, I mean, here around, the ratio crosses 1, and then the massive black hole is the dominant component of the total angular momentum of the system. So what happens in reality? Let's go back for a second. If the black hole is small, you have enough angular momentum to totally reorient the direction of the spin of the black hole in a single accretion episode. Okay? If instead the black hole is large, okay, like in this case, let's assume this is the direction of the black hole at t equal t0, and then you have an accretion event here. Okay? Since you don't have enough angular momentum in the disk, the spin is not going to realign instantaneously here, okay, but aligns just a bit. If you have a preferential direction, that means that your accretion is not isotropic, then you will, here it's quite simple, no? You will have way more events on this side than in this side. So what happens is that you have a bias random walk toward alignment. Okay. And this is exactly what we see here. Now, of course, it's way more interesting for many of us to study the spin parameter, though the other point, in my opinion, is quite interesting. Let's see what happens. Here are the results. So until the black hole is small, okay, it doesn't depend that much the fueling, you know, isotropy, because you align the spin so that the spins are going to be high, although not maximally, the black hole will be not maximally rotating. When the black hole is large, okay, what the spin that you expect actually depends on the dynamics of the fueling fueling material, okay? And if, for example, you have a net degree of anisotropy, you can have up to maximally rotating black holes. Here, this is the chaotic case again. This is the F equal to zero. I just want to point it out again. It has nothing to do with the coherent case, okay? So just to give you an idea, since I don't have that much minutes, that many minutes anymore, those are the observations of massive black hole spins. You see that there are quite a huge mess, I would say. But at least people are trying. For example, in this object, a group said that the spin is larger than 0.9 or so. Another group said it is lower than 0.2 or negative. So there is a bit of a, I mean. But let's keep in mind that measuring massive black hole spins is one of the scientific drivers for many proposed, for example, X-ray missions or gravitational wave detectors and so on and so forth. So hopefully the thing will improve. Okay, and as a last comment, I just want to focus on these, okay, panels. In the case in which you have a very clear anisotropy in the fueling, that evolves into large black holes having almost maximal rotating spins with a direction that is constant in time. Okay, that could be interesting, for example, for radio galaxies in principle. So that's it. Apparently, I've been even faster than 13 minutes, that's cool. So we can go to dinner. But let's just discuss a bit the conclusions. First of all, if you want to model the evolution of spin, you have to keep in mind that spin is a vector. If you don't do that, your conclusions are going to be amazingly biased, and you're going to miss most of the interesting evolution. Only huge black holes have a direction of the spin that is constant in time, unless, of course, you assume at the beginning, coherent accretion, okay? The small black holes are highly spinning, regardless the dynamics of the gas fueling, but only the most massive black holes are those that can be close to maximum rotating. And my message would be that the dynamics of the gas that actually fuels the black hole matters, okay? So that we shouldn't try to guess what is the spin magnitude a priori, but we should try to look at the gas dynamics in the nuclei of galaxies, maybe cross-correlated with the measurement of spins and spin direction, and try to link the large scales, 100 parsec, 1 kiloparsec, to the small scales close to the black hole. And that's it. Thanks.
Questions?
So just a couple of comments about the last slide you have. So over the past couple of years, we've come to a deeper understanding of the various methodological issues that you need to take care of to measure spin. So for example, the point that you flagged, the low spin measurement came from forcing solar iron abundance in the models, whereas if you let iron abundance be a free parameter, the fit improves and it locks into the higher spin value. Now this is a really fascinating plot because if you take into account those methodological issues and then you sort of flag all of the, you go to the literature and you apply quality control criteria, pick the measurements that have actually adopted those methodologies that we now know are good, you start to get consistent results and you systematically find high spins up to a few times 10 to the 7 solar masses, and above that you start to get some low spin objects appearing. So actually seems to flesh out the envelope that you've outlined very nicely.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't want to give a biased, you know, impression. I agree with your point,
yeah.
And I didn't want, as you probably can imagine, I didn't want to enter into the details of the spin of the iron line fittings. Although I totally agree with you, and I think there are some other issues that have to be considered, like for example the geometry of the, you know, radiating source.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Yeah. It's an ongoing
I know. That's why. But I agree. I agree with the main point.
Yeah, but this is a very interesting plot.
I missed something you might have mentioned at the early on in your talk. Individual accretion events. What's the mass relative to the mass of the black hole?
So for example, in this plot, we tried changing a bit the parameters. And I mean, if you want, later on we can discuss a bit on what changes each parameter. But for example, in this plot, okay, let's say from 10 to the 7 solar masses on, every single accretion event has 10 to the 5 solar masses. So we assume it to be a representative whatever mass when in falling cloud. Of course, if you are in a coherent case, it doesn't make any difference, right? Because you keep on accreting in the same direction. If the black hole is smaller, then we cut the mass of the accreting event, of the accretion event, to the mass of a Shapiro-Zhang disk up to this, to the radius at which it becomes self-gravitating, okay? And then you have a mass in the disk that is roughly of the order of 0.01 the mass of the black hole.
So it'd be interesting because the radius at which the disk becomes unstable scales with the mass of the black hole. And so you could try that. You could, for example, at 10 to the 9, the amount of gas that would accrete unfettered star formation is about 10 to the 6.
Yeah.
And so it scales down as you go.
Yeah, but we actually did it. You know, I mean, we did exactly the exercise that you asked in the paper, but as a matter of fact here, okay, you can see the transition to the two scriptons. But this is roughly what you're saying here. If you keep on evolving this line, at the end of the day, the black hole is the one that is going to dominate anyway. So it changes, I agree with you, it changes a bit the mass at which the transition between, you know, high spins regardless the dynamics and the effect of the dynamics, but not that much.
Me first? Okay. This is basically the same question, but more general. So to what extent is there actually an explicit dependence on the black hole mass? I mean, you showed like this transition above 10 to the 8 where the semi-chaotic case would cause alignment, but I'm having a hard time seeing where there's actually explicit dependence on the mass versus just the assumptions you've made about the accretion episodes.
But for example, well, in this case, it's quite obvious, right? From here, where the transition, so in general, it's again the discussion that we just had. But in this specific case, okay, here, the mass of every single event is assumed to be limited at 10 to the 5 solar masses. So that if you increase the mass of the black hole, okay, the mass ratio between the accreting material and the black hole is gonna decrease, as well as the angular momentum evolution. This is again, as we were discussing before, this would happen again, even if you don't put this limit, but with a lower piece, of course, because you don't limit appropriately the mass of every single accretion event.
So is it fair to say you know this is physically motivated what you've chosen here, but there isn't, I mean, it does depend entirely on what you assume for the accretion episodes, the mass of the accretion episodes.
So let's be more specific. Of course, it does depend on what I assume. And for example, if I assume 10 to the 10 solar masses accreting onto a 10 to the 9 solar mass black hole, I would call it coherent accretion. And in that case, it's quite simple. The evolution is analytical, and you get to whatever high spin you want, depending on what is the process that limits the spin parameter that you are thinking about. But yeah.
Okay, one final question before we move to the next.
Can we come back to the plot that you compared with observations? So I was thinking that in addition to accretion, there might be mergers that happen. And I was recalling that once we did this experiment of having several generations of mergers, and interestingly enough, I think after three mergers, you start to find a universal curve distribution of the spin value. And this peaks around 0.7, between 0.7 and 0.8. And I noticed that in your first plot, you do have some observations that point there. So one possibility could be that this observation has some mergers in it.
That's a very interesting point. And of course, the distribution you are referring to on the other side neglects the possible accretion events that, you know, happens in between coalescences. The aim of this talk is to say, you know, we didn't pay enough attention evolving the spin through accretion. And of course, you can add up the coalescences. And I think, there are a number of works that claim, for example, that this could be particularly interesting for very massive black hole, because specifically at a low redshift, because maybe there you didn't have that much accretion, or maybe the accretion was at a low Eddington rate. So I agree with you, and I would guess that it probably matters here, but it's definitely a correction that we didn't. This is a first attempt.
Thanks very much, Massimo. So the final talk of this afternoon session is on stars, disks, and massive black holes. And our speaker is Tal, who is just sitting here.